Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh, Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
The thing that I just started on OutKick that I want you guys to pay attention to, it's related to the same thing. Black Lives Matter, and how can we get the athletes to pivot or understand the mistake of embracing Black Lives Matter? I think a lot of people want to boycott sports. A lot of people are disappointed that I'm watching a lot of this NBA basketball. Look, I love it, man. The first sport I was a fan of was basketball and the Indiana Pacers. Went to ABA basketball games. I'm not going to give up on basketball. I'm not going to give up on athletes. I don't give up on people. And so I don't think a boycott is the right approach. You've got to take the long, holistic approach of trying to educate these athletes to what Black Lives Matter really represents and what's being done under the umbrella of Black Lives Matter. And so I start.
So I can't get around it.
So low, you can't get under it.
So high, you can't get over it.
So high, you can't get over it.
This is a chance. This is a chance to dance your way. Out of your constrictions.
Here's a chance to dance our way out of our constrictions.
After the city today released that body cam video showing an officer shooting and killing a 13-year-old boy. The teen's name is Adam Toledo, a seventh grader. The video is hard to watch. It is one of 17 body cam videos released. We've combed through all of them and will walk you through what they appear to show. On March the 29th, cops say they responded to reports of shots fired and found two males on scene, one an adult, 21-year-old Reuben Roman, who police say had fired the shots. One officer tackled and arrested him. The other was 13-year-old Adam, who cops say had a gun in his hand and was running away. Another officer chased him in an alleyway, and that's where the video we're about to show picks up. Again, the warning. It's upsetting to watch.
Please stop! 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 Hey, show me your head! Stop it! Stop it!
Goes on to show the officer immediately radioed for help, trying to tend to that wounded teenager, eventually performing chest compressions, trying and failing to revive him. You could hear the officer, right before shooting Adam, yell, "Drop it, drop it." But a surveillance video from a different angle appears to show Adam had thrown the gun away. Here's Adam running down the alleyway in the distance there. The cop follows. Then Adam stops at that break right there in the fence. And if you look closely, it appears he throws something behind the fence. Here, look again from a different angle. His arm reaches out slightly right before he turns to face the officer. Police later found the gun a few feet from Adam's body. There it is in the spotlight right behind the fence. On Saturday, an assistant state attorney told a judge that Adam did have a gun in his hand when he was shot. But today, a spokesperson for the state attorney's office said the attorney had been wrong and failed to fully inform himself before speaking in court. NBC's Antonia Hilton live in Chicago. Antonia, how is the community reacting tonight?
Good evening, Shep. I'm right here in Millennium Park in Chicago, and protesters are expected to start gathering here throughout the night in honor of Adam Toledo's memory and in reaction, of course, to this horrific and disturbing and graphic video released just hours ago. The mood across the city right now, Shep, is one of heartbreak, betrayal, hurt, and much of that is directed towards city leaders, to the Chicago Police Department, and then also to the prosecutor that you just mentioned. Many people here say that they felt that they were led to believe that what they would see when this video came out was, you know, Adam Toledo obviously menacing the officer, holding a gun in his hand, ignoring commands. But that is not what the video shows. And so while people were bracing for a traumatic and graphic video, they were still shocked by what they ultimately saw. I want you to take a listen to what the family's attorney said earlier today.
Adam, during his last second of life, did not have a gun in his hand. The officer screamed at him, "Show me your hands." Adam complied, turned around. His hands were empty when he was shot in the chest.
You can hear the anger in the attorney's voice there, and that's been reflected in some of the conversations that I've had here tonight. Adam was laid to rest just last Friday, and the family has been calling for peace, for their own privacy, and city leaders are now also calling on people to be patient. This video has illuminated much for folks, but there is still an ongoing investigation, Shep. The Civilian Office of Police Accountability is expected to continue investigating this, and they want there to be new facts and details out before people reach their conclusion, Shep.
Antonia, thank you. Shepard Smith here. Thanks for watching CNBC on YouTube.
No justice, no peace.
Rally cries are once again echoing in the streets of Chicago. This time in the name of Adam Toledo, a teenager shot and killed by a Chicago police officer a week ago.
Adam was 13 years old. He still had a full life ahead of him.
Last Monday morning, that short life came to a sudden end when Chicago police responded to an alert of 8 gunshots picked up by city ShotSpotter technology near 24th and South Sawyer. That's when police say they came upon Toledo and a 21-year-old man in this alley. Police say officers started running after the pair, and in what they call an armed confrontation, an officer shot the teenager in the chest.
Officers must make split-second decisions when it comes to the use of deadly force, and that is a heavy burden.
Police released a photo of this gun they say investigators recovered at the scene.
We will find the person who put this gun in Adam's hand. We will not be deterred by threats from gang members.
An attorney for the Toledo family released a statement that said, in part, we want to correct the hurtful and false mischaracterization of Adam as a lonely child of the street who had no one to turn to. This is simply not true. Adam was a loved and supported 13-year-old boy. He lived with his mother, his 90-year-old grandfather, and two of his siblings. His father was in his life. They all loved him very much. Adam was not alone.
Show us the tape! Show us the tape!
Now there is simmering anger in Little Village mixed with grief over the death of a child. Tonight, police say they're on alert over alleged threats from Latin King gang members, but people in the community say they're inviting the police commander to Little Village for a peaceful community conversation tomorrow night.
Hey, if you like that video, be sure to subscribe to our ABC7 Chicago YouTube channel.
All right, today's It's My House is titled The Common Denominator, Streets, Alleys, and Black Men. George Floyd died on the street. Eric Garner in New York died on the sidewalk. Mike Brown he died on the street.
What's this guy, Toledo? Toledo, we just played the audios of him.
Yeah, Brown.
Up in Chicago, he, I guess, died in the alley.
He died on the street. They choked him to death.
The 13-year-old, he got shot.
He just got shot when they buried him Friday night.
Well, the cop, I don't want to steal your thunder. Streets and alleys, what needs to happen? Well, the common denominator is these people died in the street or an alley or something like that. But, I'll let you put it the way you put it, Allie. Pleasant Stephens. Give your commentary on that. What needs to be done, or what do black people need to be doing in regards to streets and alleys?
We need to own the street, and we need to own the alleys, because we are the taxpayers to keep these people working that has no vested interest in where we live.
So, but now, all these people who've gotten killed didn't have a vested interest in none of those streets and alleys.
Yeah, the people that got killed had a vested interest in streets and alleys, because if they wasn't children or youngsters, they were living with their parents, and they didn't have any other way to travel other than streets and alleys.
Right. Well, what do you suggest we do, start building our own streets and alleys?
I suggest that we first thing we do is that we fire the people that we have in office. Mm. That would be the first thing we do. Then after firing the people, we would build a accountable force that any time that you approach a person, you would not use force that would be stiff enough to kill a person.
Now, wouldn't it be easier, Pleasant, just to go out and find, I don't know, your own 40 acres or 100 acres or 500 acres and
That would be a stretch for now, but I would say that needs to be started right away. Build your own streets and alleys so that you'd have full control over who is policing your area and your surroundings.
Right. Because you do have a number of black townships around the country that, you know, the people who founded those towns, they built their own streets and alleys.
And you didn't have anybody getting killed.
No.
With force, because they had owned the streets and alleys, like my father.
Right.
My father owned the land that we lived on.
Right.
So we got to get back to business. We have given our authority to somebody else that don't have any lack of creating more havoc than we are already living in. How can a young girl that's going in a city that is looking for a job get killed because her taillight is out? The damn taillight was built by a person a person that had a job. What do we do? We always create jobs for people that need to go to work so that they can pay what? Tax. And the tax does what? The tax takes these people into office to where these people in the office now are killing us by the drone.
Well, I'm all for.
Let's take Emmett Till, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Emmett Till was killed where? He was killed in home. Because the Ku Klux Klan said that he whistled at some woman. And then later, it has been noted now that the woman lied on him whistling at her. And what can a whistle do to anybody because we have no vested interest in streets and alleys in where we live. I don't give a damn how you turn it. We have no vested interest in where we live. And that if we're going to do something about it, we better gather our opinions and get a change together and start building our own streets and building our own alleys and building everything that we eat. We got to go back to the older days and start to build everything that we are consuming. Everything from shoe mail, from the shoestrings to, we got to build everything from shoestrings to from shoestrings to earrings.
I agree. And we had, learned something about road construction. And we're talking about simplified stuff.
Yeah.
I know I've been in black townships where the roads and the streets were built by matter of fact let me even illustrate this more. Now and for the, we've been on 7 years so far. And, you know, we hear, you know, the Mike Browns in Ferguson, Missouri, Eric Garten, New York City, for the last year or so, Minneapolis, with George Floyd and all this pops up, to Chicago with this guy Toledo. But we don't hear about, and then, of course, Florida's got its share of stuff, too. But, you know, North Brentwood, Maryland, black township. We don't hear any news stories out of that place. Fairmount Heights, Maryland, right outside of D.C. Don't hear anything about Fairmount Heights, Maryland, another black township. Highland Beach, Maryland, another black township. Don't hear anything coming out of that. Up in Illinois. Now, we Toledo's case and other cases happened in Chicago, but Pembroke, Illinois, 45 minutes to an hour away, depends on the time of day and the traffic. Or Hopkins Park, Illinois, don't hear anything. None of these towns, Summit, Oklahoma, Redbird, Oklahoma, Renningsville, Oklahoma, Mount Bayou, Mississippi, Eatonville, Florida, all these are black towns. You don't hear any, none of these towns make the headlines for black people getting killed, because in those towns, the streets and alleys and law enforcement, where they might have it on a limited basis, is owned and controlled by black folk.
That's right.
But the common denominator in all these places where black folks have been making headlines, we don't own the streets or the alleys. For the Million Man March, they didn't walk on anything that was black owned or controlled.
That's right. And we have gotten nothing out of it.
I know it's an extreme thought to think of go out and get your own 40 acres, which is very doable. Or even get your own 1 or 2 acres is very, you know, like I say, you can, we're going to do some workshops on road construction because there are, I think, 7 basic types of roads. You know, simple stuff like dirt roads, you know, gravel roads. But we're going to have some hands-on workshops on how people can make those. Most people, like I say, are not going to go and build their own community. Because, like, I think it's easier
to go out and, like, say, Eric, you mentioned earlier, fire the politicians on hand, okay, the ones that need to be fired. That's going to take some time and money to do that.
Well, let's get busy. It took time and money to build what we're getting killed with.
Yeah.
That we don't have any control over. So as we built the roads and things that we're getting killed by and with, and the people who is in control and running it, because they're getting paid to kill us, then I think that we are far, far, far behind. That we should be building roads because we know how. We should be building alleys. We know how. What is it that we haven't built in America? We've been a dependent nation of people that's being controlled and killed by other people. Now, here's an example.
Mm-hmm.
What about these people that has walked how many thousand miles to get to
the United States?
United States.
And they're still walking.
And they're still walking. How many thousands of people that walked thousands of miles to get to the United States?
I know, so it's a high number.
How many people are children have traveled those empty miles, and how many have died to get to America? Hell, it's time for us to go to work. We're waiting on somebody else to take charge and say, oh, well, they did this and they did this. The people that have done what to black and brown people, the people that have created the mess that we're living in today, don't give a damn about black and brown people, and they have demonstrated this all the way from slavery.
Well, we have to be more proactive and independent, because hey, I'm all for it. Look, hey, let's get a couple of hundred acres, or let's get 1,000 acres. You know, and put in our own infrastructure, you know, our own
That's
roads.
Right.
And, you know, like I say, the brain trust is there.
Yeah. Yeah, we just, I don't know why we're sitting and our children is dying at the hands of somebody else. Daily. They are dying daily at the hands of police. Well, who in the hell is the police policing?
Well, now, let's go back in the time machine, Pleasant. When you were young, for people that don't know you, where are you from, and then what kind of things did you learn at a young age as far as building and even, you know, how to make a simple driveway? That's a start, you know, a baby step to making a street or alley.
A simple driveway is just made by hands and stuff that don't simple driveway is just made out of concrete, and that's what made driveway.
Miss Bridget is here. She needs to talk to you.
Miss Bridget is here.
Yeah, she in the living room.
And I'll be out. Give me my pants. I got somebody here to pick up some stuff.
You gonna come out there?
Yeah, I'm gonna come out there.
You need a shirt too?
Yeah, I need a shirt. Hold on there, Ellis.
Okay. Anyway, while Pleasant's doing that, today's podcast is titled The Common Denominator, Streets, Alleys, and Black Men. We need to start you know me, I'm extreme. Let's get a few acres or people out there on your own, in your own family or whatever. Get you a few acres and build your own community with your own town. I mean, your own, your own towns, and create something from scratch and put in your own infrastructure with your own the roads and streets and alleys. That way you're safe. Well, the probability of you being safe increases, I'll put it that way. And we got Pleasant Steffens on. I think I know he's got one of his people at his house waiting for him in Chicago. I'm going to see if we can draft her to get on the podcast as well. Matter of fact, on our Facebook page, I think I put a video on there on road construction and the seven basic types of streets. Because all acres of property I have, I didn't build it, but it's dirt roads. We have dirt roads.
I'm back with you.
Okay, is that the pallet bridge at your house?
Huh?
That's the pallet bridge, the pallet queen.
Yeah, it's the pallet queen. It's up here with me.
Well, maybe we can draft her to be on here too.
Yeah, we can grab her, cause she's here to pick up the machine that we're turning the soil to plant out food.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, let you holler at her for a second and tell you what you do. Tell her what we're doing.
Okay.
Hi, Mr. Davis. How are you today, LA?
Fine. We're getting ready to draft you to be on this podcast, too. We're doing a live stream right now. So now, what's the latest project you guys are doing? The tiller?
Well, we're putting in, allowing Mr. Pleasant and Mrs. Alzora to be growing their own food.
Mm-hmm.
They're cutting out a small area in which they live, in which they're going to plant them some vegetables and of their own so they can have their own produce.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
All right. And how's the pallet business, is that going?
Right, I'm just getting back into motion
from
the last time we had shared.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
And all the things that's been going on, the fight. But, you know, everything is moving forward now.
Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a better time to talk so we can touch down on some things.
Sure.
But right now I'm just trying to pick this item up for Mr. Pleasant and Ms. Azora so they can at least have it and we can be planting some seed coming up this next week or so.
All right, well, I'll let you get to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, with building this little garden and working with this small space, it's going to have to be vertical.
Oh, you're doing a vertical garden, okay.
Yeah, that's the only way we really can truly do it.
Okay.
But you can take advantage of a small space and make it as productive as possible.
Well, that's good. All right, well,
right.
I'll let you get to it, because I know you're there to pick up that tiller or whatever you guys are doing, so y'all get to it then.
But we're hoping that we can get you here soon.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a couple of years, so yeah, it's about time to get back up that way.
Well, that would be really great so we can talk about some projects.
Yeah, when I come up there, we're talking about streets and alleys, how we need to build our own streets and alleys. So,
right.
You know, well, I'm headed to Pembroke and out in the country
mm-hmm.
where we can pick up a few acres.
Right. Mr. Pleasant called it something. What is that area called? Where?
Well, you got Pembroke, you got Hopkins Park, but now I've been to those two places up there. But then there are other places that I haven't been up. There's a whole lot of places I haven't been up there, including over in Indiana.
Okay.
Because what we're talking about today, Pleasant brought it up over the weekend, and that's why it's today's topics. We looked at, well, let's take the latest case of the 13-year-old kid, Adam Toledo. Okay. He was shot in the alley. So what Pleasant brought up is, well, we don't own any streets and alleys. At least, most of the places that these people shot, we don't own these streets or alleys. Whereas in Pembroke and Hopkins Park, it's a black-owned town.
Mm-hmm.
So all the infrastructure, there are probably some white folks that got involved with it. But overall, they have the vested interest in it, and you don't hear headline stories out of Pembroke or Hopkins Park that you hear in the Chicago, D.C., New York, San Francisco, and the list goes on. Because we don't have any vested interest in the streets and alleys in those towns. And streets and alleys is not a topic that people talk about. So after Pleasant brought up, I said, well, we'll throw it out here the first thing of the week, which is today.
Right. Well, how that's basically been going, they do contracts. So finding people who has the equipment and the supplies who are in business of our own kind and get those contracts for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, we go out and get our own 100 acres, 500 acres or 1,000 acres and call it, well, let's call the town Bridgetville. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can, we can put in our own infrastructure, streets, alleys, whatever we wanted. Because you got new towns popping up, too. You got people buy acres every day. So you start new communities.
Well, the word I was looking for was incorporate. When the town is not.
Yeah, well, or you can do you can find an unincorporated place.
Unincorporated, that's what it is.
Right, and do your thing there too.
Right, because that means we're more free to make those decisions.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's now I've been in like some really small towns, 300 people or less. And that were incorporated, sandwiched right next door to a place that was unincorporated. So it seems like the smaller the town, generally speaking, there are some towns that might be small and regulated, highly regulated. But for the most part, the smaller the town, basically you hit2,500 people and below particularly if you hit 1,000 people or less for the size of a town, is just more, from what I've seen, more experience, more freedom. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
So in building, but then a lot of people, you know, that's the neighbors, they get together and they, like I say, probably the least expensive road to together is a dirt road.
Right.
You know?
I still like them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find nothing wrong with dirt roads.
I have no problem with dirt roads either. I think we want to start having, like I said, when Pleasant brought the topic up that we don't own our streets and alleys, then we need to, there are people that know how to make driveways, roads, dirt roads, gravel roads, simple stuff that we can teach people. That never thought about before. I figure it's a better use of time than talking about reparations all the time. So,
right, I definitely understand. But it has been done. I remember when they built their streets, they built their buildings brick by brick,
mm-hmm.
And that was Booker T. Washington at Tuskegee University.
Booker T. Washington, that's why I was telling a friend of mine again for the gazillion time the other night. I said, look, in my opinion, the best book on personal finance, and most people don't see this book as a book on personal finance, is, my favorite book on personal finance is Up From Slavery by Booker T. Washington. Because like you just said, when he was living, that Tuskegee University, in my opinion, the curriculum, the way he had that structured, I think that's the best way to go. Tuskegee doesn't resemble that now. But back when he was living, it did.
Well, it was still built brick by brick.
Yeah. Oh, they made their own bricks.
They made their own bricks. They made their own bricks, and they built those buildings themselves.
Right.
When George Washington Carver got there, they had one building. Mm-hmm. Within 10 years later, they had 82.
And they did their own infrastructure. They did their
how
own.
How did these people build 82 buildings? And they only worked with the staff and the staff, the teachers, and the students.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the employees, the people
right.
who got the job done.
Yeah, Washington was big on industrial education along with the academics.
Right, academics, and then, you know, it was economics because you would learn how to produce.
Mm-hmm. Which Tuskegee today doesn't resemble that. But then that's
I know.
Yeah, that's a whole nother part.
All of those things has been stripped of mm-hmm. that because of the greatness that came out of Tuskegee.
Right.
So,
yeah, like I said, when Pleasant brought it up, streets and alleys.
Right. We really have to look at ways to make money. Ways of creating incomes, creating wealth.
Well, there are people out here that have had and are having a very good career in building or making streets and alleys.
Right.
You know.
Right. And we can do all things once we get in that flow of cash flow of creating wealth and income.
Right. Yeah, because
right.
you can create wealth by, you know, making streets and alleys.
Right.
I'm glad Pleasant brought that up. But anyway, I don't want to hold you up because, like I said, I know you're there to do one thing, and you done gave us a little
I appreciate you, L.A. We'll be back on that. That's
okay. All right.
Yeah, L.A.C., we got to take another look at what's that town that the Ku Klux Klan burned up?
Black Wall Street, which Black – you know, I'm glad you brought it up. Black Wall Street, which was developed by O.W. Gurley,
Oklahoma,
he bought
Oklahoma.
40 acres in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma
yeah.
is a good example to where we can start to building our own cities.
Well, they had 50 black townships in Oklahoma at the time. And none of those black towns, there's 15 of those towns still stand left. But none of those towns that black folks in Oklahoma had going, they had their own streets and alleys.
All right. Hold it right there.
Yeah.
Hold it right there. Why aren't we extending, and like we're doing here this morning, why aren't we extending building up our already in place our own infrastructure in our streets and cities that we already have built?
I'm all for that. I've put some money. I bought land and a house in Taft, Oklahoma. That's just
you
one
got land in Taft.
And I don't even live. I don't even live there. I'm in Florida, man. This is like 1,000 miles away from me. So yeah, when we met 2 years ago, I flew up to Chicago for a day. Just a day. That's it. And we went after I got to your place. We went from your place in Chicago to Pembroke and Hawkins Park and spent the afternoon there. It was the three of us.
Well, don't that have Don't that have streets and alleys?
That's it. And Pembroke and Hoppins Park has streets and alleys that black folks put in. And you don't hear about, in Pembroke and Hoppins Park, don't make the news with all this craziness.
What about the guy that I got in contact with, and he's retired now in Georgia?
You talking about in Alabama, Bossier, Alabama?
Bossier, Alabama.
Yeah, that's another place where black people, you don't hear about any news stories coming out of Bossier, Alabama, because they don't have no, they own the streets and alleys.
Damn right. I say to any and all black folks today, let's get our damn shoes on and go to building cities and rebuilding the city that's already built, and we don't have to go through a whole lot of changes.
Yeah, because I've been in some towns where if you're on foot or driving by a car and stop and take a look, there's a bunch of, man, they're untapped gold mines of streets and alleys that are in, that where people are still living in these towns. But due to neglect, okay, nature takes over. So, you know, you'll see all this thick brush, but then you'll see a street sign. Then you talk to somebody that, you know, grew up in that town and is still in that town, and they'll tell you how that whole, that's an actual street.
Wait, hold on. The reason why those towns has became
blighted,
have become, because the people that owned the manufacturing decided that they was going to move out.
Well, yeah, during the Great Migration, a lot of people did move out.
They moved out.
And you can pick it. You can actually know what. There are blocks upon blocks of streets that anybody within the sound of our voice right now, you can buy those streets.
Well,
now, granted, you're going to have to get rid of the underbrush and all. There's going to be some work involved. But there's a whole bunch of blocks available right now.
We got enough kids getting killed and enough young people getting killed to put them to work. Hell,
well,
that's what they're looking for.
You know what? That's true. That's true.
What about these people? How many thousand of them is walking from 500 to 600 miles to get to America?
And they're coming. You know, I'll give you a good example. In Muskogee County, there is a house that, a structure, it's not a house. It's a, man, it really deserves to be in Washington, D.C. at the African American Museum. This guy, the late Napoleon Davis, we're going to do a podcast about him. He built this, like, pyramid-type structure that it, well, basically, the last time I was through there, his kids, and I'm going to see if I can get some of his children on this podcast, they didn't want to have nothing to do with it. Napoleon Davis, who was a black man in Cherokee Indian, he built this structure, it's like a pyramid, by himself. I'll probably do a podcast on him this week, and I have pictures up where you can see what this man built by himself.
All right.
But Mexicans got control of it now.
I tell you what, we got to go because we got some people here just waiting on us.
All right.
Because we fixed to turn some dirt.
All right. Well, thank both of you for being on, and have a good rest of the day. Pleasant, before you go, wait a minute. Before you go.
All right.
410, your mic is open.
This is Beasley. I just wanted to holler at Pleasant Stephan, the Honorable Pleasant Stephan, and just say it's a breath of fresh air to hear his voice because I hadn't heard it in a while. And when people like him talk, I'm like, that EF Hutton commercial, I shut up and listen. So I didn't want to say anything. I just wanted to say hello to him, and it's good hearing his voice again. And I get off and shut up and keep on listening to what he has to say.
Well, thank you so much, because I've been under the wire, but I'm back on, get back on my feet. My wife said it wasn't time to leave, so she put me back on my feet so that I could get busy to try to develop some towns that belong to us.
Oh, and Pleasant's on Zoom 3 times a week. He's on Zoom 3 times a week.
Yeah, given that address to where we're on in the time.
Okay.
Because I'd like to have him on our show.
Yeah, he's on 3 times a week, so.
It's good. It's
he's
good
on Zoom 3 times a week. Not Blog Talk, but he's on Zoom 3 times a week. Yeah, Beasley, I'll fax you. I'll text you that information.
Yeah, take care of him and get him on our show, will you?
Okay, sure will.
Go. We got a whole country to rebuild. And this is where that vested interest come in at. And we need people like him with the dazzle man that have all kind of infrastructure building knowledge that we can use. He don't have to work. All he has to do is just point and tell the kids what to do.
Right. Right. All right, well.
Yeah.
I'll text Beasley the information when you're on Zoom. Like, I think you're on Sunday, Tuesdays, and Fridays on Zoom.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll let y'all get to it.
Okie dokie.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to get out and find some dirt so we can create some food for our people.
All right. All right. Thanks, Pleasant and Bridget as well.
All right. Appreciate you.
Okay, same
here. Thanks a lot. And thanks for bringing him on. I'm glad to holler at him.
All right.
He got knowledge that a lot of folks would jump off a train to kill.
All right. Beasley, what's your comment on Black Men Street Finales? If you got one.
Oh, I'm back. I'm just listening today because, you know, it's very rare that we have a soldier out here fighting for us like the Honorable Pleasant Stephen, you know, we need to honor our elders, but, you know, hey, look, he has the answers, and that's why I listen. And the thing is, I don't have anything to add to what he has said and what you said this morning, because I'm all for it, you know, and I don't mind getting out there and getting dirty if need be.
Property out where you live at. Tell us about the roads. What kind of roads lead to it? Do you have any, you know, driveways in, you know, within the, you know, because that's quite a stretch of land you got.
Well, it's funny you should bring it up. I'm in the process now. I'm going to send you a map of my stuff. I'm working with the Serbia now to do some lots, you know, on my property, and do a subdivision.
Oh man, that's great! You know what? Now that's the topic that we need to cover.
Well, when I get a chance, I'll send you a copy of it. Let you see how he's drawing it up, because you know I'm land rich and money poor, so I got to get some out of it. Plus,
yeah.
I give you this. My old man did before he died. He had a subdivision here, and he was selling lots out of that too. And he did it before the codes changed. So I'm just following his lead. But when I get this thing drawn up, I'll send you a copy.
Okay. Yeah. Talking about, I'd rather talk about subdivisions and reparations. So, I'll look forward to that. Let's see. Let's go to the next caller here. 314. Wait, hold, you know what? Wait a minute. Before I go to 314.
What?
Before, wait a minute.
What's the four-digit number?
Let me.
Is something not on the car?
All right, wait a minute.
It's not on the car.
All right, because I'm still connected to. I had to patch him in on my number. Okay, what? I gotta disconnect him. I don't think he's still realize he's still connected. Anyway, let me. I'm just trying to. Okay, let me play this, and then we'll come back and then go back to the phone lines.
Before I get started on this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod, so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been. And has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots? And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time. And he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh, oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over. When I say it's over, everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one now. Real quick. Y'all take what he will find God.
Look. The main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negroes just don't get it. Because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you. Because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns. Because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying,
See, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me.
No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year, one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087, this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Okay, today's podcast is titled The Common Denominator, Streets, Alleys, and Black Men. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, that, you know, if we look at George Floyd, where he died, Eric Garner, where he died, Sandra Bland, where she got arrested. Let's see, who else? Mike Brown, where they had his body laying out until, you know, the coroner truck picked him up. Let's see, who else? There's a few others, but the common denominator. Oh, this guy in Chicago, what, 13 years old, 14 years? I think he's 13. He was in the alley when he got shot and killed. So the common denominator is these people, none of them had a vested interest in that street or alley where they live. Now, I give out occasionally on this program some extreme ideas. I mean, tiny houses are basic. That's an extreme idea. It's extreme housing. The average person is not going to live in a tiny house. I know this. But that's okay. Black townships, the average black person in the United States, they're not going to move to a black, because they're basically in rural areas for the most part. And, you know, most people who grow up in an urban environment is not going to go to the country. Not that they might go to visit, but they're not going to live there because they haven't been educated into that. You know, just a few minutes ago, Beasley brought up, you know, subdivision. Most people, no matter what color they are, they don't think that big or they don't think that extreme. You know, they just give me this. And most people pick. A lot of people pick up, you know, the wrong type of housing. So, however, the point is that, you know, after Pleasant brought it up over the weekend, the reason why the first podcast out of the park this week here on It's My House is that you don't, these little small hamlets, these little small towns, villages, whatever you want to call them, where they have a backstory. Why did former slaves go to these remote places and from the rough, what is this an expression, getting it from the rough, their own towns? There's probably close, maybe 900 to 1,000 of them. And it's a mixture of municipalities, unincorporated communities, that type thing. Some are called settlements. But there's 900 to 1,000 of them in the United States. Some are in, now, outside, you also have some in Canada, New Brunswick, Central America, all the way down to Argentina. They don't teach a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, which is extreme news to most people. You just won't find it. None of these places, I'm not saying they're crime-free, because a lot of them have house break-ins from out-of-towners, but none of the low, you know, you don't hear anything about extreme, because if it were, it'd make the news. So these places, these former slaves, it typically were families, a handful of families, sometimes 10 or 11 families, if that, would buy acres of land, you know, some bought 300 acres of land, some, you know, 1,000 acres of land, some families like Joseph Jake Simmons, originally from Muskogee, Oklahoma, his family had over 1,000 acres of land, this one family, and other families like them. But, and they're, like I say, if you go to these towns today, you know, it's two towns, I know, matter of fact, I know where a whole cluster of these towns at, but two of these towns that I've set foot in so far. If you get out and walk by foot, talk about they're like hidden gold mines. Now, this is within the town. They're hidden gold mines in plain sight if you got the right type of mindset. And here's what I mean. If you're walking, you'll see a lot of thick brush or wooded areas. And you just think it's thick brush and wooded areas. But if you look, you'll see occasionally a street sign. And you talk to somebody that, you know, that's grown up in that town or been there for quite a while, and they know the history of the town. Or you get the plat of the town. In this country right now, all over the United States, there are places where people are still actively living. But there are other parts of the town where you see this thick brush and woods, wooded areas or whatever. You can buy up blocks and blocks of streets right now in the United States. If you have your developer's hats on, if you have your developer hat on. And as Pleasant stated, now, once again, I already know, people, this is too extreme of an idea. But legally, those streets are already platted and everything. And if you can get a team of people in there, you know, clear out the brush, and then basically redevelop the block. Because all the legal work is in place. But the first step is to discover this place, these places, and then, you know, go through the particular government agency. I'm not going to put that information out here. Some of you probably already know, but there are hidden gold mines out here. Let's see. I wanted to play something for you guys. But, like I say, in a lot of these places, you know, it's a lot of the towns I go to and visit, they don't make the news. Because they just don't. They like I say, there might be no places perfect. But, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of these towns don't make the news is, number one would be low density. You know, a place like Chicago is a high-density place. The more people, the more rules and regulations. That you had to deal with. Let's see, I'm trying to find... Okay, here we go. Let me play this and I'll go back to the phone lines.
At the end of his life, he is calling out for his mama. And every mother heard him. We hear him.
We did hear him.
We heard George Floyd. We hear him.
Kadiatu Diallo was pained when she heard about the death of George Floyd.
As the mother of Amadou Diallo, having to suffer my loss on February 4th, 1999, my wound was open again.
On a busy corner of the Bronx, a street sign signals a story from another time, one that shook New York to its core.
My son was a dreamer, and he always dreamt of going to the U.S. and getting a computer degree.
From Guinea on Africa's west coast, Kadiatu packed up her firstborn son, Amadou, and sent him to follow his dreams.
Amadou, at the age of 21, came to America, crossed the ocean, and he was doing everything right.
Renting a modest apartment, working where he could.
The last time we spoke was on January 31st, 1999. They said, Mom, I'm so happy. He said, I have finally saved enough money and I'm going to college.
And he was so proud of himself.
Absolutely.
4 days later, Kadiatu's phone rang again. It was a relative.
They said it was shooting, and then they say it was by the police. I dropped the phone.
Police said they were searching for a rape suspect and came upon Diallo. Thinking he was reaching for a gun, they opened fire. Four white officers.
Guys, anyone like to make a statement here?
5'6", 150-pound Amadou, 41 shots. It turns out he was unarmed. He was reaching for a wallet.
The problem was reaching for a gun is a perception. They saw this black man in the vestibule. He had no criminal record. He never even had a traffic ticket in New York City. Retelling this story today is breaking my heart.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because Amadou was this young, generous person. When you see him, when you have chance to meet my child.
Mrs. Diallo, I'm so sorry. It's breaking all of our hearts hearing this story again.
All I wanted to do was to cross the ocean and come to New York City to let the world know who my son was. I was calling him name because I'm coming, but yet he's not there. So I entered the vestibule and I saw all these bullet holes.
19 of those bullets hit Amadou.
And I went into his apartment. I picked up his clothes and I just brought it to my face to smell him. My child was no longer there.
All four police officers were charged with second-degree murder. But a year later, a jury found them not guilty. Police have not been held accountable for many deaths that people believe.
Time and time again.
Now, as many grieve George Floyd and demand justice, Kadiatu wonders, 21 years after Amadou was gunned down, is this really a transformative moment?
I really pray and hope that is the case because we are tired. We are exhausted. Girl, I went to so many funerals.
It has grown into Kadiatu's lifelong mission, a plea for her son Amadou, rooted in his dreams of America.
From my heart to the law enforcement community, I want them to really learn how to see our children. That they look at them and see them as beautiful children.
How about seeing them as human beings?
See them as human beings. Let them live.
Of course, Diallo, well, you just heard how he passed. Later this year, we're going to start, I don't know how we're going to do it online, but we'll figure out a way, a game night. And one of the games that we'll be doing, we want to do a game night to solve, a familiar game to solve social problems, in a sanitized way at least, will be Monopoly. That's one of the reasons why I often play Balling on Baltic, because we're going to have a card in the game that doesn't come with the game. And that is, if you pick the card, you'll have the opportunity to buy the board. Everything on that board, there'll be a card on that. You'll have an opportunity to buy the board. And I think, once again, this is extreme thinking. I already know most people are not going to jump on my crazy bandwagon with this. But the people who, you know what, any town that you can think of, like Houston, Texas, which is a huge town in population now, that was started by two brothers. I have a saying on this program, everything starts with one. In the case of Houston, Texas, it was two brothers that they had the crazy-ass idea to buy all these acres of land. Two people, that was it. The first documented black township developed by an African American man who was formerly a slave, born a slave, this former slave had the crazy. Can you imagine some of the people that he told, man, I'm gonna build my own town. What kind of names he got called? What kind of crazy he got called? Fred McWhorter, or as he changed his name legally to Free Fred McWhorter. Read up on him. I've done at least one podcast on him so far. He started a town called New Philadelphia, Illinois. It no longer exists because after he passed away, there's people, you know, you're going to have an influx of younger people that moved to that community to keep it going. And now it's a historical site. But there are scores of communities out here that you can literally play Monopoly. You know, some people talk about their fixer-upper houses. Well, they're fixer-upper communities. Once again, this is extreme thinking. But everything you can think of, from Amazon, which started with Jeff Bezos selling a pair of shoes online. Somebody placed the order for the shoes. He took the money, went and bought the shoes, and then mailed them to the person. That's how Amazon started. Everything starts with one, okay, in some cases, two or three people. But it's typically one. Sometimes the idea might sound very simple ideas. And then some ideas, depending on who you talk to, are like, man, you're totally off your rocker and crazy. And some might seem very extreme. Depends on who you talk to. But like I said, when we put this together, this game, one of the games that we'll be using is Monopoly. And the reason why the card, it'll be probably a single card maybe about five cards in there that are not normally part of the game. One of the cards will be, you'll have, if you pick it, you have an opportunity to pick up, to buy the whole board. Other cards will be, you know, you can buy a half a board or a quadrant of the board. People think this way in real life. With some people, it's not an extreme, like Beasley talked about earlier, a subdivision. To a lot of people in this country, that's a normal idea. Well, you know what, I'm going to put together a subdivision. For some people, that's their career. For other people, that where their mindset is the social services office or WIC or Section 8, and I'm not knocking any of those things, that's some people's mindset. So to tell a person who's on Section 8 that, you know what, why don't you just buy up the whole block or get together with some other people and y'all buy up the whole block. That idea is extreme sounding to the Section 8 person or the person that's in the social services office. That's an extreme idea. You're crazy. You're fucked up in the head. However, other people, it's normal. And then you got a whole bunch of people in between. So this game that we're organizing, we're taking games that people are familiar with, but just adding, you know, a few other cards with, to some people might seem like an extreme idea. Now, you're going to have some people that are going to say, you know what, the game of Monopoly isn't played that way. Here, some people are that way. They go by somebody else's book, and that's their book. You heard the expression is that they did everything by the book. And for some people, going by the book works. For other people, Amadou Diallo did everything by the book, and look what happened to him. I like to write my own books. That's why Crazy LA's Bodies, Acres, everything I buy, I want it raw. I don't want your utility companies. I don't want municipal. I don't want none of it. By doing a lot of volunteer work, I've learned how to do that stuff myself. And I know where to go get people that sets me do that. But I think we need to start thinking more. Anyway, we'll have more people. Just like, what, 2 weeks ago, we had on a guy from St. Louis. He has his own soap company. To most people, that is an extreme idea. I think it's a great idea. He has his own soap company. Last week, we had a last Thursday or Friday. Oh, no, it was last Wednesday. Last Wednesday, we had another guy, Miss Moody, from St. Louis. Thank you, Pianchi, for those two guests, by the way. That he has his own grocery store. Some people that are on the, a Section 8 or food stamp, I don't know what, WIC or whatever, on the EBT card. Okay. Some, and I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking people that have an EBT card. Okay. For some people, the thought of, hey, why don't you own your own grocery store or own your own convenience store and accept EBT cards? For most people who hear that idea, I mean that idea, particularly the ones who have an EBT card at the moment, that is an extreme, they can't process it. Some can process it. Critical mass of them, they can't process it. Well, no, hold on, I shouldn't say can't. They'll be very slow to process it if they process it at all. So the whole thing of today's podcast of streets, alleys, and black men or black people, I think we need to start, realistically, the critical mass is not going to think crazy or extreme. But maybe somebody out here will be listening. Pianchi builds extreme structures, skyscrapers, bridges, whatever. But most people, they're not on that wavelength. But that's okay. That's okay. Because somebody will, just like Obama. Obama had, President Obama, I'm guilty of this myself. The thought of a black president of the United States, I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime, to be honest about it. And when he ran for office, I'm sure he heard it. No, a black person can't be president of the United States. Maybe a Hispanic. But he had this crazy and extreme idea, I can become president of the United States. Then he kept on saying it to himself. He believed it. Then his wife believed it. Then other people started to believe it. Then the next thing you know, he became president of the United States. So with streets, alleys, this is just one cookie-cutter solution to eliminate or dramatically reduce the number of black men who do get killed. It's not a silver bullet. It's just an option. Move out to a rural area and develop your own places. 99.9% of the black people who hear this, or even white folks, anybody of any race, if you tell them to do that, they're not going to do it. I know that. That's okay. All I'm doing with this podcast is putting it out there. Anyway, let's see. 314, your mic is open.
Well, I hear people saying they're going to they want to do a lot of things, but they never do it, Ellie.
That's true.
Egg, we build homes over in Ghana and Conca, beachfront. Few people got involved. A lot of whites, they do that stuff. You talking about these people that got the... You had a 7-year-old black girl in the drive-through lanes at McDonald's in Chicago got killed.
Yeah,
a black person walked up to the car. How you going to keep them out of your town? You can't build a street or alley if it's not up to state specs, the state that you're building in. They require that those things.
That's true also.
Right, and the alley is a public thoroughway. All these ideas about our town and stuff, that don't work no more in the United States. Matter of fact, it don't even work in Africa. Because
well, the black townships, that's what they call it now. Like I said, a lot of those people, when they, this goes way back, okay, and socially times have changed. Although they started those townships basically as a place to be safe. Now you do have, I think there's some group out of Georgia. Then there's another group right here in Florida that Viola was telling me about, that they bought like 64 or 69 acres somewhere here in Florida. Just so they're a community already. Hebrews or Israelites or something like that. They're a community already. So they want to have, they purchased 69 acres or 64 acres or something like that, where they can farm and live the kind of lifestyle that they want to live.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Nothing wrong with doing that.
Yeah.
But what I was just saying is what I was trying to point out, that you're not going to build no community in any state in the United States if it's not complying to the codes and regulations. For a simple reason, because what happens if you sell that to somebody else when you have a right to do it? That's
right.
Where the public safety comes into being.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you don't build it to specs, what insurance company is going to insure it?
Right. Well, I agree with all that. All I'm saying is it's, you know, it's
no, I just
putting
want
it
to point
out there
because
if a person wanted to get into that, everything you said, they'd have to learn everything you just talked about. All
yeah,
that
I just wanted to. I just wanted to point that out. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
You can go buy your own island. That'd be more realistic.
And that's
buy
another
island.
Option, but
yeah,
you know,
buy
most
island.
People are not going to do that. But you're right, though. You can buy your own island.
Buy island and take some of these George Floyd-like characters and put them, have them as neighbors. That way we gonna have them in our hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I say. In particular, I said light characters.
Right.
That's committing all these crimes and stuff. You know, like people is out getting mad because these individuals that's out here committing all these crimes are meeting their fate. I thought the Bible taught that.
Well, I think if you catch people early, what's your opinion? It catch people
well, kid
early.
In,
I mean, when did you first start having your interest in building?
I don't know. I started doing things very, very early in my life, tearing up stuff,
mm-hmm.
and putting it together. But the thing is, like I was saying,
and see that, but that's the start, Bianchi. That's the start.
Well, people are not going to do that, L.A. They don't do it. You know, when I told you that Africans got rid of their riffraff,
yeah.
Do you believe in genetics? You know, you've had George S. Patton's grandfather was a great Civil War general.
Mm-hmm.
That was in his genes. when you look at some of these other individuals, that's great. Look at Ken Griffey Jr. His father, Ken Griffey, was a great baseball player.
Right.
And it goes on and on and on. So if we believe in genes, when we talk about the good things, what you want to consider a good thing, well, you got to believe in genes along all levels. All right,
here's a topic we haven't talked about. Let's bring it up right now. Heredity versus environment. I say environment is more important than heredity.
Well, you got to come to, no matter what the environment, you got to come to it with something.
Okay.
Hell, no matter what the environment, the people that's coming, see, when man began to walk, when I ain't going to say man, and I'm going to say because they wouldn't develop, when humanoids began to walk from Australopithecus, that's where they was crawling around on hands and feet.
Mm-hmm.
And when those humanoids stood up with erectus and started to walk, the place that they ended up and stayed was not the place that they came from. They was no longer where they came from. This stuff about people saying that when humanoids left Africa and they went to the Mideast, then they worked their way over to into Asia, India, or Russia, they were no longer mm-hmm. Africans.
We had
hell,
they podcast,
well, they
man.
Went when they left. They left and say they went to Italy. Well,
right.
They stayed there for thousands of years. So when they left Italy and went to France, they were no longer Africans. That stuff is gone. They
do
say
you believe
that.
In Pan, do you believe in Pangea?
What do you mean, Pangea? You mean the people that walked across the Bering
the
Strait and came down into what we talk
over,
Northwest America?
Yeah, the supercontinent that gradually over millions of years.
Well, yes, there was. The continents
right.
were all connected together as one landmass. All
right.
kind of studies have shown that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the similarity in the soil on one coast, on the other side of the Atlantic, they're the same similarity. Yes, that is
right. okay.
It is fact. But that was way back.
Yeah, that took millions of years to happen. You're right.
Absolutely. So the humanoids that walked down through the Bering Straits into what you call Northwest United States, they were Asians. They were not
okay.
Africans because they stayed where they immediately came from for thousands of years, and became something different. Just like blacks here in America, they're not Africans. They're United States citizens. They've been a long ways away from Africa. And then again, if you talk about genetics, well, the genetics have a lot to do, and we talk about this all the time, genetics have a lot to do with your present super, the way you're disposed
mm-hmm.
has a lot to do with it. Your sickle cell, right?
Yeah,
I have sickle cell.
Yeah,
you got some whites that got sickle cell. Why do you got sickle cell? Because in sub equatorial regions, those sickle cells, the way your blood cell is shaped, is for a good thing, so that that parasite don't latch on to them like they would with a normal cell. You predispose. So if they was doing a whole bunch of criminal stuff where they came from, well, you think that those cells, those DNA is not still in existence today? I think they are. A lot of people talk about, you got Naima wrote that book. What's the call of psychic trauma?
Yeah, psychic trauma. I haven't read that yet.
Well, do you think that psychic trauma goes back beyond the shores on the other side?
I really don't buy psychic trauma, but other than I'm looking at the people that are here today, particularly black folk, we're the survival of the fittest. You know, the best of the
well, yeah, the survival of the fittest. But why did they Why did they end up? See, nobody never talks about that. Why did you end up here? All these stories about somebody went in and stole, that's just totally ridiculous. How in the hell is that going to happen? Nobody steal nobody. How in the hell are you going to have 30 men with single-shot musket loaders going to go into a whole country and steal people? That don't make no damn sense, and it didn't happen that way anyway. It's just like you trying to go into Boston and maneuver your way around in it. But getting back to that kid that got shot in the alley, that was in Little Village. That was Latin Kings territory.
Yeah, I just heard that this morning, yeah.
Latin Kings don't want blacks in their community. So for people to be calling him black and people of color, that's a misnomer.
And from what I've heard,
I think
he looked
I sent you some videos. I think I sent you some videos of those groups in Latin in Little Village, and when they, blacks tried to drive through there, they shot the car up. It crashed and burned. Then you see another scene where they're chasing blacks, trying to run with the pants down below their ass. They don't want blacks in their community.
Yeah, some don't. I know I was in North Cameron, New Jersey once. And that's the only time in the United States that I felt unsafe. I just kept on rolling through there. North Carolina basically is all, it's all, the day I rolled through there, I saw nothing but Latino. I got Latino friends, but just
Latinos
just
ran Negroes out of,
looking at me.
Yeah, Latinos ran Negroes out of South Central L.A., fireballing some of the houses. They don't want to have nothing to do with you. In Puerto Rico, they got the old saying, marry somebody white is fixing up the race. You don't marry nobody black. That's what they say. I can send you content where that's spelled out. Cape Verde Island, the same thing.
Now, Cape Verde is interesting. I haven't gone to Cape Verde, but I've been to a Cape Verdean community in the United States up in it was New Bedford, Massachusetts. And they're considered African, right? The Cape Verdeans?
They don't consider themselves African. If they don't, if they say it's a taboo to be married for a Cape Verdean woman to marry an African-American male, how are they going to consider themselves African?
I don't know. Now, when I was up there, I saw two Cape Verdeans that were, they were black. They don't identify as black.
Well,
they don't identify
saying.
That way. They identify as Cape Verdeans.
Yeah, but skin color don't mean a kin.
Mm.
Right? If that's the case, if you want to see some dark people, go look at some of them Eskimos. They dark.
Yeah, they got some dark ones. Hold on, Pierre. Listen, before we run out of time here. 410, your mic is open.
Oh, shit. You have me been on already.
410.
You know, I was going to have some people to come on and talk to you about securities, but they ain't going to be coming on those shows where you're talking about slavery and stuff.
Oh, no. Well, just like when, you know, with Moody and Elliot. No, they concentrate on what they do and where they're at. We didn't get into no slavery.
Let me read this. The pressure to assimilate through intermarriage is not unique to Latin America. In the Cape Verdean Island, when one gives birth to a white man's child, it is often said that she is fixing up the race. However, the opposite is often said of a light-skinned woman who has a child with a darker man. The term used in Cape Verde to describe this union is mixing up the race.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Well,
if I can go on and talk about some of these riots on these criminals, you know, like the man up in, and you know the funny thing about Minnesota, and I can't think of the actual era, Minnesota was an experiment. I don't know if you know it or not. Minnesota was an interracial experiment. Some programs went out the way in order to try to move blacks in where they could assimilate into white areas. And thus you have a lot of mixed people in there today. What we call, what was called mulattoes back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
and thus you have what you have. But like this one female cop, that woman, what did she do wrong other than she made a, had an accident? The man had a felony warrant against him. And like we talked about with Warren Friday, if a cop had ran plates and the information come back on the computer and that the name associated with those plates have a felony warrant and give some detail of gun violation, well, the police officer is going to usually call for backup. And then when they approach the car, they ain't going to approach the car with no damn taser in their hand. What kind of sense does that make with a person who has gun violations?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to approach the car with your gun out. This kid in the alley at 2:30 in the morning, what the heck is he doing out? Because I don't know what they do in their culture. Like I say, that's a Latino community, little village. Maybe it's okay for their kids to be out at 2:30 in the morning. I know in some black areas in St. Louis, them kids be running up and down the street at midnight. But the report that people's cars were shot at. Why are you shooting at somebody's car as they drive by the alley entrance? And why would a 21-year-old or 20-some-odd-year-old have a young 13-year-old teenager out getting involved in those type of activities? You know, when the police or anybody else approach, whether you're in the military or Marines, when you approach a situation like that, adrenaline is flowing. Hell, I've seen somebody, you've seen cases in, where when people were taking their gun out or go to reholster it, they shoot. They take the gun out with their finger on the trigger and pow, they shoot themselves in the foot. I sent you videos of that.
Yeah,
I've been rabbit hunting with people. Wait a minute, I've been rabbit hunting and deer hunting with people, and when those animals pop up, you got to make sure you're standing behind that person. If they never, if they're not experienced or never been in that situation, well, they're liable to shoot you. They just adrenaline. It's flowing.
Yeah, hunting accidents happen all the time.
So that individual, and see, here's another thing. Where is, what happened to the old run-of-the-mill process of complying? Now, yeah, we know that there's some situations that happen that people are killed mistakenly. Or should I say what people would say unjustifiably.
Mm-hmm.
But those are very rare. They're not no run-of-the-mill. Hell, of the as of the 18th of this month in Chicago, you don't have 4,297 blacks shot by other blacks. That's 339 days since Memorial Day of last year. Nobody's talking about that. Wonder why, LA. 667 murders.
I think it happens so often that people are numb to it.
667 murders. If they want, if they want to get some attention, march on those. Hell, you'd be marching every damn day, 24/7.
Well,
667 murders.
One of the articles that you sent me was Breonna Taylor's mother stated that the local chapter in her neck of the woods for
BLM.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter was a fraud.
Well, hell, people knew that. Well, a lot of people said that. Everybody takes advantage. Al Sharpton is a fraud. And Tawana Brawley.
He just deals with dead victims now. Or dead people, rather.
Benjamin Crump is making a lot of money off of these people.
Oh, God, he's cleaning
up. The lies
up.
They say, like the lies they talked about with Mike Brown. Mike Brown is charging a police officer.
Yeah. Trump is cleaning up.
And these
up.
People that's out here riding, they cleaning up too, right? They got yet another store to go run into and steal articles of clothing and tennis shoes. But, you know, here's the thing. What Minnesota should do is like they've done in San Francisco, where you can go into a store and have your calculator, start putting things in the basket. When it get close to $950, stop at $940, then walk on out the store with your basket of stuff. Because in this liberal leftist city, the officials have said that people are stealing because they need it. Mm. Oh, well, L.A., would this be not a good time for blacks to start their businesses? Suppose you had a black business.
Which
and for some reason or another, wait a minute, and you don't talk some black friends and buddies, let's put our money together and start this store. Yeah, let's do it. And then all of a sudden, here somebody comes in, you in a city like this one, and many of them are going to be that way too. What the officials say that there's what you call stealing for need. And you have a bunch of blacks come walking up in there because you know whites ain't coming down there and shopping your store, right? They already left.
Right.
Let's be realistic with this. It's time out for a bunch of foolishness. Whites ain't coming down there unless somebody just accidentally walk in and you left the door open. So when them blacks coming in, load up their baskets and walk out with your stuff, well, you already done lost. You were lost before you started your venture.
Mm-hmm.
So what you going to tell your people that you talked, the blacks you talked into putting their money together in order to start this store? Man, you'd be lucky if you get out of that meeting with your life. Talk them into doing some crazy-ass mess like that amongst
mm-hmm.
these silly people. So
that's
let's put
true.
Some, let's put some reality in the way it is out there in front of these people trying to relive their lives through some other kids or trying to live these myths. The great Stevie Wonder made a song about that called Superstitions.
Oh, those lyrics are pretty accurate. I'm going to have to play that song probably in a few minutes. Later today, really.
And like
all
I
right,
told you
yeah,
before, Africa has a whole lot of opportunities. They offer Mugabe offered black farmers all the land they want. Just come on over here. You can farm it. Bring your equipment over. L.A., they didn't do it. The Fianchi Stu gave blacks 30,000 acres. Nana El Penn, I was over there at his place, and he gave me a map and asked me, could I help him? I said, well, the best thing you need to do if you're working with black people is to build some model homes.
Right.
Well, these Negroes in America don't know nothing about going out securing the things needed in order to build a home. They used to drive down the street, see a sign on a yard, then they work it from there. Well, he died. And I think out of all the makers, I think it was immediately they gave him 500.
Okay.
I think he probably got 3 or 4 homes built at the most. It got so bad that the stool, which is the local community, the chief, they took the land back. And I think they killed some of the natives, killed 2 women over there for some reason or another. Yeah.
Well,
but I'm going to be watching the papers.
This Monday.
When you get all that stuff together, let me know. I'm going to read about it.
Oh, I will.
See if 410 out there wants to come back in.
Oh, wait a minute. 410, Beasley, you there?
Yeah, I wasn't going to call in, but you know what? I get sick and tired of colored folk that hate black folks, and especially the self-hatred is so deep until it just they talk just like redneck crackers. Now, this thing about genetics has something to do with whether a person is a success or not. That was an old racist premise that said that black folks genetically was inferior to white folk. And we got some colored folk is, well, I won't use the word, but anyway, they're so misinformed until they'll say whatever white folks say to demean and insult black people. Now, this thing about riffraff coming from Africa, you know what? Seems like Africans would have kept that riffraff over there where they are now, because this riffraff that you're talking about built one of the most successful, most powerful economies in the world. So now when you're talking about riffraff, seems like riffraff did pretty damn good in America. Everything that you use, including the inoculations that they immunizing people with the virus, all the way down to when you sit down to take a crap, was the inventions and the talent coming from black folk. Most of your inventions here are multi-trillion dollar industries right now on that black folks and coming from black folks' inventions. So when you talk about riffraff, I think this riffraff that you're talking about that came over here on these boats did mighty damn good. In fact, that's the only reason my good friend over there is enjoying the success that he's enjoying. And the thing is, since we're riffraff, I don't think he was born here in America or his ancestors came from America. Damn, they didn't come on the fucking, on the damn boat too. So now this stuff about black hating and anti-black sentiments, that just doesn't get it with me. So the next time my good friend talk about riffraff, well, goddamn it, his ancestors were riffraff that came over here on the boat just like mine did. So now, you know, I get sick and tired of black folk, of wooden heads here, and the white, ventriloquists use their mouth to come out and demean and insult black people. So now, with that being the case, and look, this thing now, if you read the statistics, and I'm going to read them to you, because we get a bad rep, and I want you to listen to this. See, a lot of people talk out of their butts. 2021, in January, there were 35 mass shootings, 29 total killed, 145 wounded. February, there were 43 mass shootings in the United States, 49 killed, 152 wounded. March, 48 mass shootings, 70 killed, 188 total killed, wounded. And in April, it ain't even 30 days yet, and you already had, what, almost two mass shootings a day, 58 total count, and 120 dead. Now, that ain't Chicago. But see, every time something comes up, they always mention, well, you know, blacks aren't shooting up the neighborhood and everything else. But you see, when you got woodheads, they don't do the research. All they do is just spout out and regurgitate white racist talking points. So the thing is, and look, 99.99% of those mass shootings were white boys. But you don't hear that. Always talk about Chicago and how bad we black folks are. If we black folks were so bad, why come America is one of the major, if not the top economy out here in the damn world? It's because of the work and the slate and the sweat and the genius of our people. So the next time you hear somebody say riffraff came from Africa, ask them where did their ancestors come from. I think riffraff did a mighty good damn job of going ahead on and doing a whole lot for this country and not getting credit for it. So that's all I got to say.
And the next all right, time well, tomorrow we're going to cover heredity versus environment on on that. Thank you for that feedback, Beasley. Yeah, we're going to cover that topic tomorrow. Heredity versus environment.
Yeah, please.